Kalia says, "Did something happen I'm not aware of?" "No." I turn my face away from him as I feel heat rush to my cheeks. Am I blushing? I haven't blushed at being caught staring at a man in... Here we are. The doors to the great hall are open already, the sound of the nobles' chatter wafting out to us. Goliath doesn't pause as we enter, though the nobles instantly quiet, perhaps at the way we're walking arm in arm, when no one else is permitted to touch the king without suffering death. I scan the faces and the seating arrangements, trying to figure out what the surprise is. He didn't redo the walls or the rugs. The table appears the same, except... Is it my imagination? Or is it a bit bigger? The king and I traipse past open-mouthed nobles on our way to our usual seats, my mind whirring as I try to figure out what I've missed. And that's when I see our seats. I freeze in place, bringing Callias to a jerking stop beside me. The table is bigger. He commissioned a new one, and at the head of the table, where Callias always sits, there are two chairs. Two. The table is twice as wide, allowing for us to sit side by side at the head of the massive oak piece. This isn't just some polite gesture. This is a statement, one all of the nobility can see and understand. But I don't understand. Why? I ask. Callias looks around at the quieted nobles and coughs meaningfully. They instantly resume their morning chatter, so we can't be overheard. I told you, you're my equal. You've assisted me in more ways than one. You've been my constant companion these last couple of months, and I don't ever want you to leave, Alessandra. I want to show you how I respect and appreciate you. But this, in front of all the nobles, you might as well have proposed. Actually, I want to talk about that later. My head snaps in his direction so fast, my neck cracks. When we're alone, he clarifies. Come. He gently tugs me toward our seats. I somehow manage to make my feet move, despite the way my head is spinning. First elation, then disappointment, take turns occupying my thoughts. He's going to propose. But he said it so offhandedly. It was hardly romantic. I don't think he means it romantically. He means for a practical alliance, surely. But he's going to give me power. Share his power, just like he's sharing the head of the table. But I still won't be able to touch him. I won't have him. Which is more important? I know the answer to that. Obviously the power. But then, why do I feel so miserable inside? Your Majesty, the new table is simply divine, a voice says from my immediate right. I startle. When did Rhoda sit down? To her right is Hestia, who is also seated next to her Lord Paulos. The two chairs closest to Callias are left empty, but my side is full. Callias is practically in full shadow form to supplement the new table arrangements. I'm glad you approve, Callias says. You seem surprised, Alessandra. Did you not know? Rhoda asks. I didn't. It's a terribly romantic gesture, she says, only slightly lowering her voice. Callias heard her. I'm glad you think so, Lady Nicolades. Lady Stathos doesn't seem to know how to react just yet. I'm pleased, of course, I hurried to say. It was only unexpected. I make romantic gestures all the time, he says in mock defense, putting on a show for those seated closest to us. He has a point, Hestia says, pulling her attention away from Lord Paulos for a moment. He showers you with gifts. We've all seen the gorgeous trinkets. This should be no different. It's a table, I say, not a necklace. Very different, and very unexpected. Callias brings a spoonful of porridge to his lips. I have to continue to surprise you, else you'd find me boring and be done with me. Rhoda laughs. Not likely, Your Majesty. She looks up and down what she can see of his profile before giving me a meaningful glance. 15, her eyes say, as if I could ever forget. Callias grins at her politely, and the meal resumes. As my eyes trail down the table, I spot Reuben and Petros laughing about something together. They look so carefree and happy, but I can't help but note that one noble is missing from the new table, as though its very existence has prevented him from joining us. Poor Leandros. Don't you have meetings today? I ask once we finish breakfast and Callias escorts me from the room. No, I've cleared my schedule. Your ball is coming up quickly. I thought I could help with the rest of the preparations. And as I mentioned, there's something we need to talk about. I clear my throat. Yes, I'm curious to hear more about this topic we're going to discuss. Well, that sounded overtly formal. The man wants to propose for devil's sake, and I find myself wanting to run far away. But this is what I wanted. It's the whole reason I came here. So why am I dreading this conversation? Shall we go to the library? He asks. I don't say anything, but he leads me in that direction all the same, his guards following. It's a beautiful day, Callias comments as he glances out a window we pass by. Storm passed quickly. Then he curses. Why am I talking about the damned weather? Still I say nothing. The guards leave us to enter the library alone, and Callias closes the door behind us. Do you want to sit? He asks. I shake my head. I'm sorry, he says. I was stupid. I didn't mean to bring it up like that. Proposing, you mean? Yes. I shouldn't have surprised you with the table, either. I should have talked with you before I had it made. I just thought you would like it. I stare down at my boots. But it's not just a table, is it, Callias? No. No, it's not. It's silent for a moment, and I lift my gaze to study the spines of the books around the room. Anything to avoid looking at him and his perfect features. For this conversation, I don't think I can bear to look at him. We just do so well together, he says at last. You have a mind for scheming better than any of my counselors. You've proven yourself time and again as an invaluable ally. Simply put, you're brilliant. I enjoy myself whenever I'm in your presence, even if we're quarreling over something. I enjoy our trips away from the palace, being in disguise, going on adventures. It's more fun than I've had in years. I've been so lonely lately, but ever since you've arrived, I've been happy. But this isn't just about me. It's about you too, and I've been trying to think of what this arrangement could offer you. We've already talked about the invitations to parties and balls. I promised to start attending with you. I want you to join me in all of my meetings. That has me looking away from the walls instantly. Seeing that he has my full attention now, he continues. I want you by my side, helping me make decisions for the kingdom. I want you to help me conquer the last three kingdoms in this vast world. I want you to be my equal, Alessandra. My queen. You would have power, a guard of your own. We would talk before making decisions. We would get the council off my back once and for all, and you would be free from your family. You'd, of course, have access to the treasury and the kingdom's funds. You wouldn't be without your own means.
Equal power. Rule the kingdom. With him? That means I wouldn't have to kill him. He'll give me everything I want, and I won't have to get rid of him. My friend and companion. But what about more? I swallow. You want me to be your queen, but in name only. Is that right?
Callias loses his voice as he searches my face for something. That's right. We would be married, so it would be official. But you'll keep your quarters and I'll keep mine. No one would ever need know we don't consummate the marriage. Very few know the reason why I can't touch people. Most won't be able to tell whether we're intimate.
This is it. It's everything I've ever wanted. He's offering me the world. He's just not offering me himself with it. When did I start to want that?
A rough knock raps on the door. Go away, Callias says, never taking his eyes from me. Begging your pardon, your majesty. I recognize Epaphras, the appointment keeper, as the owner of the voice on the other side of the door. But you wish to be informed immediately if Baron Drivas came to the palace. He was quite forceful, and the guards had to restrain him. He is also accompanied by a constable.
My breath leaves me at the knowledge that Hector's father is in the palace. Clias turns to me.
Why would the Baron bring a constable into the matter of trying to get you to marry one of his sons? Did you sign some sort of contract with him?
I swallow. No, I didn't.
This is ridiculous, he says to himself. Epaphras, have the guards send them up. Let's deal with this immediately.
Of course, sire.
I feel my stomach sink beneath the floorboards. Must we?
You don't have to remain here. I can scare off the Baron on my own. But this harassment of you is ridiculous. I should have dealt with it the moment you brought it to my attention.
I'll stay, I say feebly, thinking of no way to delay this moment, or to get out of it. I should have quickly said I'd marry Callias, though I don't know that that would have offered me any more protection for what's about to happen. The door opens minutes later. The guards surround two figures. One I recognize as Faustus Galanus, Hector's father. The woman with him must be the previously mentioned constable.
Your Majesty, Faustus says. At last, I've been attempting—
You will not speak until I allow it, Callias says with all the authority of a king.
Who are you? He asks, turning to the woman.
Constable Damali Hallis, Your Majesty.
And what is your purpose in being here?
Baron Drivas hired me to look into the disappearance of his youngest son, Hector.
Callias doesn't turn his head, but he glances to me briefly out of the corner of his eyes. Disappearance?
So it was when we started the investigation, Your Majesty, but we now know the young nobleman was murdered.
Chapter 24.
My stomach drops once more, but I allow nothing but surprise to flit across my face. Hector's dead? I ask.
I note that Constable Hallis watches my face with a perceptive eye, looking for any tells. She's a woman with hard features, a slightly too large nose, eyes too close together, a square chin. She has her ebony hair swept out of her face in a neat bun.
For several years, I'm told, she says. Some days ago, his body was discovered in the Undatia Forest. Apparently, there have been a series of mudslides in the area. A couple of horsemen found and reported the body.
Hold on a moment, Callias says. Who is this Hector?
He directs the question to me, and I understand the true meaning.
Who is this man to you?
My first lover, I answer.
And his murderer, the Baron flings at me.
One more word out of you, Drivas, Callias says, and I will have you sent to the dungeons.
The guards surrounding him step inward, ready to pounce on the Baron should the need arise.
Your Majesty, the constable says, with your permission, I have some questions for Lady Stathos.
Callias turns to me, defers to me. How would it look if I sent them away without a word? No, I must appear innocent. I will answer her questions.
The constable steps forward. Do you admit, then, to having a relationship with the deceased?
Yes, we were intimate, but not for years now. What happened to Hector?
There was not left of him but bones by this point.
A sob breaks out of the Baron, but he doesn't say a word to accompany it.
We identified him by the family crest he wore on his finger, the constable continues. I had the remains examined yesterday. One of the ribs was nicked. Definitely points to a knife wound. I'm told you carry a knife on your person at all times.
I startle backward, as though affronted. You're not seriously suggesting I killed him? And who told you I carry a knife?
Your sister.
Hallis pulls a notebook from her pocket and glances through it.
Crescentha Stathos.
Yes, I know my sister's name, I say bitterly.
Crescentha, the bane of my existence. Why won't she just die in a hole?
Many people carry knives. Why should that matter?
That alone doesn't. but the remains of a wooden chest were found with him, and one of the planks bore the initials A.S. Those are your initials, are they not?
Alice asks the question like she's done every single other one, coolly, unemotionally, as though she really couldn't care about the answer, even though she already knows the answers to all of them. I dare glance at Callias. He's looking me over with the most peculiar expression, one I cannot place, as though he's seeing me anew.
He can't believe her.
I lose the strength in my legs and topple slightly. Callias is there, though, holding me up. Surely plenty of people in the kingdom have the initials A.S., Callias offers.
Perhaps, Alice says, but not all of them also had a relationship with the deceased. Who ended that relationship, Lady Stathos? It was Hector, was it not? He broke your heart and you retaliated by stabbing him, locking him in a chest, and then burying him in the forest.
Oh, gods.
You're speculating, I spit back. There is no proof that Hector ended the relationship, or that I had any cause at all to harm him.
Perhaps not yet, but I will find it. I've already spoken to the staff of your father's estate. I'm told you certainly would have had the ability and the means to get Hector's body out of the estate unseen. You frequently snuck out at night unnoticed, only to return well past noon the following day. And I would like to request the king's permission to seize the knife on your person to compare it to the nick in the deceased's ribs.
I keep my gaze cool and collected as I turn toward Callias, deferring to him this time. Please read my calmness as innocence. I haven't lost everything yet. Hector will not come back to ruin me one last time. I am this close to becoming queen.
Constable, Callias says with a calmness that scares me, you and the Baron will excuse us. I appreciate you bringing this matter to my attention. As Lady Stathos is a member of my court, I will handle the investigation from here and get to the bottom of it.
The Baron looks as though he has much more he wishes to say, but wanting to remain in good standing with the king, he allows the guards to escort him and the constable away. Epaphras follows them out, closing the door behind himself. I manage to walk to the nearest armchair and fall into it.
Waiting. 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 Callias is going to explode on me at any moment. He'll have me thrown into prison until he decides on the proper day and manner for killing me. Callias laughs so loudly and abruptly, I nearly topple out of the armchair. He has his hands on his knees while his whole body shakes from the force of the laughter.
What the devils? Did I break the king? He manages to straighten after a moment and looks over at me, but then his face contorts and he's back to uncontrollable laughter. I feel my limbs grow tight, my face grow hot, anger pooling into every muscle.
What the hell is wrong with you? I snap, shouting over the top of his laughter.
He wasn't even this bad when he read Orin's love letter. He says something I can't quite make out, then rubs tears from his eyes and tries again.
You killed him!
He throws his head back and laughs and laughs. And somehow, I know that I'm not in trouble. How can I be if he's this jovial over the fact? I could deny it, plead on my behalf, but Callias isn't stupid. Though the constable doesn't have enough evidence to convict me, Callias knows the truth of it. I've an inclination to kill again, I say, glaring at him. Callias props himself up on the nearest wall of books, catching his breath. Once he's calm, he strides over to me and places his gloved hands on either side of my head.
My little hellion. Quite the force to be reckoned with, aren't you? Oh, say you'll marry me, Alessandra.
I swallow, thoroughly confused. You're not going to hang me?
Hang you, he repeats, letting his hands fall to his sides. The man did you wrong, Alessandra.
Honestly, you've saved me the trouble of tracking him down and killing him myself. But I pardon you, he says simply. I blink. Just like that?
Just like that. Anything for my friend.
I don't know that I've ever hated that word more than when it comes out of Callias's mouth.
Will you marry me?
He repeats, easily turning back to our previous conversation. What will happen if I say no?
You're still pardoned, if that's what you're worried about. I would never blackmail you into marriage. You'll be free to remain at the palace as long as you wish, or to go. His face drops a little. But I would be most saddened if you left.
I think for a moment, but Callias can't bear the silence.
I need you, Alessandra. Say you'll be mine and I'll be yours.
He needs me, but he doesn't want me.
He's giving me power, everything I could ever want.
Why is this a hard decision? Finally, I say, I want a proper proposal, a public one.
I cross my arms over my chest, and no more laughing at me over Hector Galanis. In fact, I never want to hear his name again.
Callias grabs my gloved hand and kisses it.
Done. Now, let's discuss what you've done so far for the upcoming ball. Don't you think it will be the perfect opportunity for a proper and public proposal?
I'm marrying the king. The crimes of my past are forgiven.
I'll be free of my family once and for all. I can banish them from court forever.
But there is a killer out there. Someone who wants to take Callias and this future from me.
I will not let that happen.
I realize that Callias and I have perhaps been troubling over the wrong thing. The talk of a public parade through the streets had us worried. But I realize now that my ball is both sooner and just as public. That will be when the killer strikes. I'm sure of it. I share my concerns with Callias while I sit in my rooms, working on my dress for the ball a couple of weeks later.
I thought of that as well, he answers. We'll double down on the guards. Check all the guests for weapons before they're admitted into the ballroom.
Just what is the range on your abilities? I ask him. What is the farthest away the murderer need be to cancel your shadows?
Callias shrugs.
You've never tested it?
Of course I have. I just don't want to worry you. At my responding glare, he answers, 50 yards.
That's all? A talented marksman could manage that easily.
I'll be safe, Alessandra. We'll be safe. It will be all right. I'd feel better if none of your council members were admitted. I would as well, but we can't very well uninvite them. Now stop fretting. Come, show me what you're working on.
No, I say. I'd rather you see it on me when it's all done.
That's quite a lot of fabric, he says sadly.
Oh, hush.
Chapter 25.
Potted roses line the entrances to the ballroom. They form a maze-like path to the refreshment table, before opening up in the center of the room to allow plenty of space for the dancing.
Every member of the orchestra wears a black rose, the men in their breast pockets, the ladies in their hair, in honor of the late queen.
I have the ballroom painted, so it looks like ivy climbs up the columns.
Green rugs line the floors, perfectly imitating grass.
Rose petals have been sprinkled over the ground, giving off a soft fragrance.
It took several manservants and long ladders, but we also managed to dangle bouquets of roses from the ceiling.
An occasional petal will fall, raining the floor with even more.
I ordered tapestries to go along the walls, making them appear as though the edges of a garden rest all around us. The electric chandeliers shine brightly. I wanted everything well lit, not only to give the illusion of noonday in the garden, but so that any treachery or deceit would be impossible to hide behind shadows. No one is killing my king tonight.
Guests have already started to pour in, though the ball doesn't officially start for another 10 minutes. I can see everything from above, where I wait on the staircase, overlooking my arrangements. As it is my ball, I get to make a grand entrance, so I bide my time waiting until the right moment. Really, I'm just waiting for Callias to show up. I wouldn't want him to miss seeing me in my new dress. I've outdone myself. Overall, the dress is a light yellow. Every few inches, the fabric folds over itself as it moves upward, to give the shape of a rose's overlapping petals. I've stained the tip of each fold a bright red-orange to match the fine roses found in the queen's garden. Normally, I'm not overly fond of the color orange, but the queen's roses, and my dress by design, are simply divine.
I wear a hoop skirt beneath the layers of silk, but the bodice is fitted, the top sleeveless, and my matching yellow gloves are dotted orange at my fingertips. I've pinned my hair to one side, so it falls down my left shoulder, leaving my neck bare on the right side. I've curled the strands so they fall in perfect ringlets, a black wonder over the light fabric. When Callias does finally arrive, he doesn't have himself announced. Rather, he tries to enter quietly, going right for the throne on the dais. Having seen the fabric I was using to make my dress, he wears a matching yellow waistcoat. So light, it could be mistaken for white. It looks remarkable against his bronze skin. As soon as he is seated, I give the herald orders to announce me.
Our hostess, Lady Alessandra Stathos, second daughter to the Earl of Maesis.
I hold up my dress in both hands and let a light smile grace my features as I descend the stairs.
All heads turn in my direction.
And I know it's not just my stunning gown that causes their chattering. I'm the girl who caught the eye of the king. The girl who has the council following her strategies. The girl who saved the kingdom from an assassination attack. I've worked up quite a reputation indeed. And tonight, Callias will propose and shock everyone. He watches me now as I take each careful step. The dress is wide enough to allow my legs plenty of movement, but the floor-length hem and heeled boots make tripping an easy feat. Yet I keep my eyes on him. With that heated gaze on me, I can see just how much Callias wants me. It is no longer a question of attraction between us. It is a matter of keeping himself safe from attack. We have a good arrangement. We'll both have what we want after tonight. He'll have a queen to help him manage and balance the council. He'll have someone on his side whom he trusts. The only person he trusts. And in return, I get power. The power to rule a kingdom at Callias's side once he turns 21. It'll only be another 17 months. When I reach the bottom of the steps, Callias doesn't approach me. In fact, he turns away, engaging one of his nearby council members in conversation. Disappointment and irritation mingle within me, but I keep my face in a pleasant smile. I think to start welcoming my guests, but as I take a few steps in one direction, the partygoers scatter. What the devils? Perhaps I've only imagined it. I head for the refreshment table, thinking to check on the food arrangements. Skirts sway away from my path, and a group of gentlemen cut off their conversation mid-sentence to turn away from me and find somewhere else to stand. What is the matter with everyone? When I'm steps away from the table, I relax as someone approaches me, until I realize it's my father. I don't recall sending you an invitation, I say, distracting myself with a glass of champagne from the table.
Must have slipped your mind, Father says. But once he gets close enough not to be overheard, he adds, I'm here to rescue you, Alessandra.
I take a sip from my glass as though I don't hear him. Father is hoping to get a reaction from me. It won't happen.
Did you hear me, Alessandra? I'm going to save you and your reputation.
Again, I say nothing.
What with the rumors of your crime spreading like wildfire, we must keep you safe by wedding you off right away to a powerful man.
My eyes flit to Father's face. Rumors of my crime?
Yes, the murder of Hector Galanis. Everyone is talking of it.
That's why everyone is suddenly giving me a wide berth. They think me a murderess.
Damn, Faustus. He must know the king cleared me of all charges, but that didn't stop him from running his tongue.
Don't worry, darling, Father says. A hasty marriage will offer you some protection. I've been talking with the Viscount of Thoricus.
Reuben's father?
You're familiar with his son, then? Wonderful. He recently ended his engagement with a baron's daughter. The two of you will make a smart match.
I nearly spit out the champagne in my mouth. So now I'm to marry someone beneath my station?
He has money, Alessandra. And with my dear friend Eliades behind bars, we can't very well rely on him anymore.
I set my empty champagne glass down on a tray as a servant walks by. Then I face my father fully.
So nothing less than a duke will do for Chrysantha, but I'm to wed a future viscount? Is that it?
You can hardly afford to be picky with the way people are talking about you.
I startle my father when I start laughing. You never listen to me. You never have. But let me be clear. I don't need you to save me. I don't need a hasty marriage. I have the king, and he has pardoned me of all charges. You would know this if you ever bothered to ask me about the situation instead of coming to your own conclusions and solutions. He's proposing to me tonight. I finish.
He hasn't asked my permission.
He doesn't need to. He's the king. And as I said, you're not getting a cent out of the treasury for me. He tries to get in another sentence, but I don't let him. No, this is my party. My night. You do not get to ruin it. I eye a couple of guards against the walls. When I catch their attention, I beckon them to me with a hand. I half expect them not to listen, but they do. Two young men come striding forward, rifles slung over their shoulders.
Yes, my lady?
One of them asks. Have the Earl escorted from the ball. He's not welcome. If he does not leave willingly, you have my permission to use force.
Father lets out one laugh. Who do you think you are? The queen?
But the two guards step between me and my father.
This way, my lord.
Father looks upon me with bewilderment. And then, for the briefest of moments, I feel that he finally sees me. My ambition, my cunning, my achievements. The guards heeding my commands are proof enough of what I've been trying to explain to my father for weeks. I have achieved exactly what I set out to do. And then Father seems to realize that if that's true, then what I said about not receiving a bride price for me must be true as well. His face turns to one of panic as the guards grip his arms firmly and escort him away. Everyone in the ballroom has paused to watch the spectacle, though neither the music nor the chatter has ceased. And now, not a soul seems to have a problem approaching me. Not when I can have them thrown from the party. Not when the king's guards obey my commands. In fact, I'm greeted by no fewer than 10 nobles as they grab drinks and sample hors d'oeuvres.
An astonishing party. Are these chocolates shaped like rosebuds?
Reuben plucks a candy from the table and tosses it into his mouth. After swallowing, he adds,
I could kiss you right now.
Best not to do it in public, I say.
Seriously, Alessandra, thank you. I know I've already said it, but I'll say it again. You freed me from Melita. She's left the palace. She was so distraught over the breakup, Eliade's rejection, and then Eliade's imprisonment. I'm a free man again.
And he doesn't even know I just saved him from marriage to me as well. How are you enjoying your bachelorhood? I ask.
I'm going to celebrate by dancing with every single gorgeous woman in attendance tonight. That includes you. Save me a dance.
Of course. He kisses my hand, and I watch him take off to a corner where Petros and Leandros laugh together. It's nice to see Leandros. I worried he wouldn't come. As if sensing my gaze, he looks over. Upon seeing me watching, he offers a small smile. I offer him a grand one in return. Leandros is clad in all black, just as Callias was the first time I laid eyes on him. Only Leandros wears a painted black rose near his lapels. I almost miss the plant, since it blends in so well with his waistcoat. The sight of the flower endears Leandros to me even more. Callias hasn't spoken to him in a year, and yet he shows up at a party in honor of the king's mother and wears her favorite blossom. The rest of his dark attire makes Leandros's golden skin look lighter, and it really brings out the darker undertones in his pale brown hair. It doesn't matter what he wears. He's so handsome and thoughtful. He really will make some girl very happy. I force my gaze away and survey more of the room. I'm pleased to find that most everyone is showing up in the proper attire. I see a group of ladies dressed as tulips, their necklines rising in the back to a standing collar, curving around their heads and to the sides of their faces, shaping like a tulip's petals. Bands around their heads have the protruding stamen. One lady is ambitious enough to attempt what I think is supposed to be a daffodil, with a gold hat shaped like the flower's horn. She looks rather different. The men are predictably boring,
with nothing more than flowers in their breast pockets to match the ladies. I spot Hestia and Rhoda and rush over to them. Rhoda is dressed like her namesake. The hem at the base of her dress is gathered into clusters that look like purple-pink rhododendrons. Simple, yet quite elegant. Hestia is a marvel in dusty pink. She too went for roses, but instead of shaping the entire dress like one, she simply had her seamstress sew exquisite beading over the entire skirt, shaping trails of thorny vines and blossoming flowers. "You both look exquisite," I say. "Thank you," Hestia says. "Did you notice my shawl?" I take the time to examine the pink silk about her shoulders. "Oh, you sewed it yourself, didn't you?" It's a simple task, sewing down the ends to give the accessory a smooth edge all around, but I know how terrible Hestia was when she started learning to sew, unable to keep her stitches straight. And while the shawl isn't perfect, as I can see a loose thread hanging off one end, most of the stitches look fantastic. "It looks amazing," I tell her. "I had a good teacher," she says in return. "The decor turned out even better than you described," Rhoda offers, "and you put everyone to shame with your dress. How do you manage to look like a flower without looking ridiculous?" "I spent a lot of time on it," I admit. "When I wasn't with Goliath, I was sewing." "Something is missing," I note as I survey Rhoda. "Ah, I told you to bring Galen. Where is he?" Rhoda flicks a black lock over her shoulder, discreetly pointing her head toward a spot against the wall. It takes me 3 tries before I spot him. I was looking for a servant, dressed in simple cotton and drab colors. I wasn't prepared for a dashing man in purple-pink brocade. He even fixed his hair, somehow getting the ends to smooth back out of his face. Despite the improved attire, the man looks terribly uncomfortable with the way his hands twitch at his sides and the way he eyes the guards nearby as though expecting to be thrown out. "Whatever is he doing over there?" I ask. Rhoda sighs. "He's waiting to, well, wait on me." "But didn't you tell him he was to be your escort?" "I did, but I think he misunderstood me. He only accepted the clothing I had made for him because he knew he couldn't serve me tonight if he wasn't dressed for the occasion." "Oh, Rhoda, you must set things straight for him." "That's what I told her," Hestia says. "I tried," Rhoda says. "I told him to walk with me and be at my side, but he insisted he could see if I needed anything from the corners of the room." I shake my head. "Stop being so timid with him. Sometimes men need a little help. Do something that he can't mistake as being a servant's task."
"Like what?"
"Invite him to dance with you." Her eyes turn down, and she fiddles with her own fingers. "What's the matter?" Hestia asks.
"What if he tells me no?"
Rhoda says. "What if he's trying to tell me he's not interested by purposely misunderstanding my intentions? What if I'm harassing him? Or worse, what if he feels obligated to abide by my wishes when I do make myself clear, because I am his employer?"
"Oh, Rhoda," Hestia says. "All that uncertainty and fear? It comes with being in love. But once you're past it, everything is wonderful. Of course Galen cares for you. He's been at your side for years. No servant is obligated to become your friend and confidant, yet Galen has always been both for you. He loves you. It's obvious to everyone. Now go and get your man."
Rhoda steals herself before marching in Galen's direction. I turn to Hestia. "Very sage advice.
I only learned it myself a short time ago."
I pause a moment.
How do you get past that fear? How is it worth what might come later? The heartbreak?"
She considers my questions before answering.
"I think that when you care enough for someone, you reach a point where it's far more painful not to have him at all than to have him and risk losing him. You realize the risk is worth it, because happiness, however short-lived, is always worth it."
We both watch as Rhoda reaches Galen. She says something to him, and he nods. She says something more, and he looks at her, his head quirking in curiosity. Then she throws her head back, grabs his arm, and drags him to the dance floor. It's awkward to watch at first. Rhoda leads, because Galen has not been taught the dances, not as a commoner. But after a moment,
His arms hold her more firmly. His feet find the steps, and he has eyes for nothing but the dazzling woman in front of him. He has the look of a man who has just been handed the world.
Now, isn't that worth it?
Hestia says. Where is your Lord Paulos this evening? I ask, changing the subject.
Oh, he said he'd be a little late. Some business he had to attend to.
Men are always attending to business.
But the king isn't. Is he not just sitting on the dais? Why haven't you gone to him?
He hasn't come to me.
He knows you're in charge of this party. Perhaps he fears getting in the way.
The party is already all planned out. I am simply enjoying it now. He should be enjoying it with me, but he won't even look at me now. Hestia purses her lips.
Sometimes I wish we could know exactly what ridiculous thoughts were going through their heads.
Indeed.
Chapter 26.
Hestia leaves my side once Lord Paulos arrives a short time later. She offers to stay with me and chat, but I shoo her away. Just because my man is ignoring me, it doesn't mean she should ignore hers.
You look lovely tonight, Lady Stathos, comes a voice at my back. Lady Zervas hasn't bothered to match my theme.
I suppose it would be stranger if she did. I doubt there's anyone in the world who bears more ill will toward the late queen than the other woman who competed for the king's heart.
The woman who lost.
You're not in costume, I respond, taking in her simple emerald-colored gown that doesn't bear any added ornamentation.
I wore green, didn't I? What says garden more than that?
I have nothing to say in response.
I was surprised to receive your invitation, she says. I didn't think you particularly liked our last conversation.
I didn't, but who could use a ball more than cranky old spinsters? She laughs at the jibe, a response I hadn't expected.
I like you, she says. I think you will make a fine queen. I only thought to tell you how to protect yourself when we last spoke.
It's too late for that, I say. More to myself than to her. She nods, as though understanding what I mean completely, before walking on. The ball is in full swing, and my friends couldn't be happier. Hestia and Lord Paulos share a dance. Rhoda and Galen are in a corner, talking and giving each other light touches. A few judgmental stares are eyeing them, but Rhoda is blind to them. I'll have a thing or two to say if anyone tries to interrupt my friend's happiness. Petros has a new lord in his arms, and the two are the most elegant dancers in the room, I'm convinced. Meanwhile, Reuben is eyeing a lady over the rim of his wine glass. Even Leandros has found a dance partner, a pretty girl in lavender. The guards are quiet sentinels at the edges of the room. All weapons have been checked at the entrances. And Callias. Callias is still on his throne, watching me, not participating, but present, as he always must live his life. I sigh and turn away. I suppose this is about to become my life full time. Might as well get used to it. But that doesn't mean I can't enjoy my own ball. Reuben still hasn't worked up the nerve to ask the lady to dance, so at the next lull in between songs, I start to stride over to him. A gentle hand comes down on my shoulder, and I turn. Dance with me. Callias pulls me into his arms before I can answer, holding me right there for the whole world to see. The song strikes up, and he moves us in time to the gentle thrumming of the violins. He lets his shadows swirl about his face to let any onlookers know he is still in full control of his powers. But his arms are tangible for our dance, so he can spin me, lift me, clutch me against him. His gloved hands move over my back and arms as he leads me through the steps. I'm unprepared for the sudden sensation of being on fire. Everywhere his gloves touch burns. I can barely feel my feet. I even trip once. I'm so aware of where his body touches mine. Damn him. What are you doing? I finally manage to get out. You don't get to ignore me all evening, only to dance with me now. He leans forward. You're so beautiful, it hurts. What kind of answer is that?
I kept my distance to keep myself from doing something stupid. Something like this.
He pulls me so close, it's indecent, as we go through the next steps. I can't even hear the music anymore. All I hear is Callias's frantic heartbeats, his warm breath against my hair. When I dare to look up into his eyes, I realize it's the wrong thing to do. I'm burning. My core goes up in flames. His gaze looks hungry, heated, desirous. The look of a man who hasn't had human contact in a year.
Callias said it himself.
No man would give up the power of the shadows except for the deepest and most all-consuming of loves. Not that I want him to love me. He met me 2 months ago, and I used to want to kill him. But now everything is different, and I want so much more. At the same time, I'm terrified of having more, and so glad he cannot touch me, that he will never hurt me, because we will never be allowed to get that close.
The music comes to an end, but Callias keeps one of my hands in his.
Come with me, he says.
He leads us up to the dais where the throne is.
No. Now. There are 2 thrones. When was the 2nd brought in? Oh, gods, it's happening now.
At some signal from Callias, the beginnings of another song cut off.
My guests go silent, and all eyes are on the king.
He seats me into the 2nd throne, before dropping to his knees before me and brandishing a ring between 2 fingers. It glistens in the light. I don't take in any details, because my gaze is locked on Callias's.
Little gasps and exclamations sound throughout the ballroom.
Alessandra, the king says in a voice only I can hear,
you've made me happy again. You've given me hope, and become an invaluable confidant and the greatest of friends. A woman I could love.
Love. Could love. If he let himself. Which he won't.
Then he raises his voice for the whole room to hear. Lady Alessandra Stathos, will you be my queen? My equal in all things? A protector and ruler of Naxos and the conquered realms? Will you marry me?
Yes. An ear-wrenching cheer goes up from the crowd, and I bask in it, in the attention, in the offer of marriage from the most powerful man in the world, in achieving my greatest goal. He's mine. But then a stroke of fear rides in, as I remember someone wants to kill my king. And should we catch this assassin, Callias will still be a target his entire life. He could be taken from me at any moment.
Callias is ignorant to my thoughts as he slides the ring onto my finger, a silver band bearing a black diamond cut into the shape of a rose.
A toast, Lord Vasco says from somewhere nearby.
I hate that he has to be a part of this moment.
Glasses of wine are passed around to all the revelers in just a few short minutes, but those minutes seem to take forever, and dread sinks low in my chest. There are so many people in the room. An assassin could easily sneak in.
He's safe, I remind myself. We banned weapons from entering the room. All the guests were thoroughly searched, much to their own irritation. No one can get past the guards surrounding the dais.
The council members stand below us. Serving maids spread throughout the room to fill glasses to the brim. Callias thanks the woman who pours deep red liquid into his cup.
To the king and future queen,
Lord Icarus Vasco says, and the crowd repeats the words heartily.
That's when I see her, hidden through the crowd, carrying a load of dirty dishes from the refreshment table. It's the little girl from the gentleman's club, from the place where Callias was touched. And now, I note with horror, the shadows that had been about his head are completely gone. He either hasn't noticed or isn't using them.
Callias, don't!
I shriek. I bat the cup that's raised to his lips away. But it's too late. He already drank. He immediately falls to the ground and starts convulsing. Liquid foams at his mouth, and he closes his eyes. Screams go up, and the council tries to rush onto the stage.
No!
I yell.
Everyone stay back! The guards close ranks, barring anyone from joining the king and me on the dais. I try to think. I need to keep people from touching him. We don't know who the murderer is yet, and...
except we do.
It was Vasco who proposed the toast and had everyone's cups filled. We knew one of Callias's council members had to be in on it. I'm torn. I have to get the little girl out of here, but I don't want to leave the king's side.
And then Leandros, Petros, and Reuben are trying to get past the guards.
Let them through, I order. The guards part just enough to let the three men by.
What do we do? Leandros asks. He needs a physician.
Don't let anyone touch him, I shout. No one. Stay here with him. I leap from the stage and kick off my heeled boots before running for that little girl. When I'm upon her, I lift her into my arms and sprint for the exit. She drops her dirty dishes and grips me for dear life, fearing I will drop her. She makes little protestations, but I ignore her. Run, run, run!
How far is far enough? What did Callias say? 50 yards?
We duck through the kitchens, swerve around overworked kitchen staff, and bound through the back doors. My feet step over rough pebbles and other refuse on the streets, cutting into my skin, but I don't let that stop me. I have to get her away from Callias. I'm not counting my steps. I'm too frantic. I have no clue where I'm going, but I don't stop until I'm exhausted, which, admittedly, isn't that far away. It's not often that I have to exert myself. We collapse on the ground, and only then do I register that the girl is sobbing, her little hands grasping my neck.
I didn't want to be there, she's saying. They told me to. I didn't know why, but I knew something was wrong. First they had me touch him, and then...
She bursts into more tears, her racking heaves making it impossible to hear anything else she says. I don't want to listen to her crying. I want to go see if Callias is all right, but I can't let her get away. She must know or be able to point out who is behind everything. Who are they? I ask. Who told you to be here tonight? Who made you touch him? She can't get any words out. She's still so shaken from the way I dragged her away from the party, and from the sight of the dying man she must now know is partly her fault. I want to shake her, to get her to listen. But I know that won't help. And I know it's not really her fault. She's been used by people older and far more powerful than she. I just want her to say Vasco is behind it and have the whole thing done with.
Alessandra?
It's Leandros. Over here. I bother to actually look around to where here is. We're in some sort of gap between the stables and a small runoff from the mountain. When Leandros comes into view, I ask, how is he?
He's all right, but he's asking for you.
I look down at the girl. I can't leave her.
I'll stay with her. She'll be here when you get back.
I hand her over, and the little girl allows herself to be held by a new stranger, though somewhat reluctantly. It's all right, I tell her. He's a good man. At those words, she lets her face fall into his chest and resumes her sobbing. And then I take off again. This time, I actually feel the pinpricks of pain that go through my feet with every step. The scenery is a blur around me as I hurry back in through the kitchens and into the ballroom. A nice streak of brown coating the bottom of my once yellow dress. Callias is standing, his back to a wall, no shadows in sight. But I hope that is a good thing, not a bad one. His council is trying to order about the guards, escorting party guests away. Are you all right? I ask. Seeing me, Callias grabs me and pulls me to him.
I'm fine. Look at you. Are you hurt? Where did you go?
In as few words as possible, I explain about the little girl and how I rushed her from the room. I tell him Leandros is with her now.
Thank goodness for Leandros and this lot. He points to Petros and Reuben, who stand on either side of him. My counselors kept trying to approach me. Vasco has already been carried off to rot in the cells until I'm ready to talk to him. My father's best friend.
I'd forgotten what this means for him. It's not only about catching the person who is trying to kill him. It's about obtaining justice for his dead parents. There was more than one, I say. I couldn't get much out of the serving girl, but she clearly said there was more than one person involved in this plot. I'll go back and question her as soon as we're done here.
Someone else can do it,
Goliath says as his arms tighten around me.
It can't be you. You must stay away from her. We need to figure out what to do with her. But later, for now, we need to know what she knows, and there are too few people to trust. Where are your shadows? I tack on at the end.
Once I healed from the poison, I wanted to hit things. Vasco's face in particular. I resist an eye roll.
You should go upstairs. Rest from this ordeal. I'll join you as soon as I have more information.
Callias sighs. Then he looks over at the men flanking him. Go with her. Help her with anything she needs.
Somehow, my chest warms at the absence of him telling them to protect me.
He knows I can protect myself.
He doesn't even need to mention it.
I sit upon the dais and hastily brush off my feet before shrugging on my boots once again.
Now that haste isn't required, I can afford to wear them.
Then the three of us return to where I left Leandros and the girl, who appears to have finally calmed down. I kneel down to her height.
What's your name?
Treya, she says after a sniffle. Please, I didn't know he was the king until today. I never saw him before.
It's okay, Treya, Leandros says, stroking a hand through her hair. Tell them what you just told me.
There were two of them, she says. That man, the one who announced the toast to the king and queen. And the lady.
What lady? I ask. There's a woman involved?
The one who's always wearing black. But tonight, she's in green.
Chapter 27.
I feel my brows shoot up to my hairline. Lady Zervas!
Of course.
Poison is a woman's weapon. She hated Callias' father for not choosing her. Of course she would have him and his wife murdered.
And Callias.
She tried to warn me to stay away from him because he wouldn't be long for this world. Her hatred must run so deep that she would want to kill the offspring of the romantic union that should have been hers.
Leandros hangs his head. My uncle. I'm so sorry, Alessandra. I had no idea.
I know, I say. It's all right. We've already apprehended him, but I need to alert the guards to Lady Zervas's treachery as well.
No need. I'll do it.
Will you just take care of him and tell him I'm sorry?
I place a hand on his shoulder. You have nothing to be sorry for.
I should have noticed something, surely. I could have...
Stop it. There's nothing to do but let it go. You helped Callias today. And you too as well, I add, turning around to where Petros and Reuben are keeping a lookout. I'll make sure the king remembers it. It's time he stopped pushing his friends away, especially with his parents' murderers finally caught.
I place the girl in a room on the opposite side of the castle from Callias and me, giving her over to one of the kitchen staff for safekeeping. I'll, of course, have to make more permanent arrangements later, but for now, I'm utterly spent. Lady Zervas and Lord Vasco are in separate cells of the dungeon. I finally managed to shoo away the nobles and their questions and congratulations.
Who was behind it?
Was my drink poisoned as well? I think I better see a physician.
Let's see the ring, Lady Stathos.
You two are a smart match. Of course, my Clarissa would have also been a good choice for the king.
I shut the door to my rooms and lean against it for a moment, rubbing at my temples. Managing people can be tiresome, but there's still nothing more satisfying than watching people do exactly what I say.
You look how I feel,
Callias says from my bedroom. He sits on my bed, one foot crossed over the other. I had to assuage the worries of the nobles.
You're already a fine queen.
I kick off my boots, wincing as my torn feet hit the floor. Walking on my heels, I make it over to a cushioned chair and collapse.
You're hurt.
Nothing that a long soak in hot water won't fix.
I'll draw you a bath.
Callias moves methodically to my washroom. I hear him fiddling with the faucets and soaps before the sound of heated water filling a basin can be heard. He pads over to me on bare feet, scooping me up in his arms and carrying me over to the tub. It was Zervas, I tell him when he doesn't ask. She was working with Vasco. The girl from the club confirmed his treachery and named her as well. We've got them both in the dungeons. When Callias moves us to the washroom, He's careful to position me so my rump can sit on the edge of the tub, my back leaning against him, and my feet dangling in the water. I wince once the cuts on my feet make contact. The hem of my now dirty gown soaks up the water, but I don't care. It's already ruined. It feels so nice to wiggle my toes in the warm water, and Callias's hands start kneading at the knots in my shoulders. I'm a little worried by his silence at my revelation, but I give him the time he needs to process everything. I don't say anything. Just let him focus on me if that's what he needs right now. I'm relieved that it's over, he says at last. I really am. But I'm also done with this. I swallow, and I'm certain Callias must feel the sudden tension in me. Done with what? I don't know what I'll do if he says me. His hands are in my hair now, letting the strands sift through his fingers. The whole night, I watched you from afar, save at the end, when I couldn't stand it any longer. And just now, I stayed hidden from a little girl for fear that someone would be able to touch me. He gives one shake of his head. It doesn't matter what precautions I take. I could lock myself up in a concrete box so nothing could ever hurt me. But that's no way to live. Being king comes with risks. I'm willing to take those. In the end, it's worth it. He looks at me now. You are worth it, Alessandra. I'm done living separately from everyone else. My parents' murderers will finally be brought to justice. But even if they weren't, I would still make this choice.
What choice? His hand comes down to the side of my face, and he turns me, tilting my mouth upward.
I draw in a startled breath, and Callias uses that parting to place his lips around my lower lip. He licks lightly at my skin as he gently pulls upward.
Forgetting my injured feet, I stand and shove him so hard I nearly fall over in the almost full tub. I take the time to shut off the water before stepping out on the other side, keeping the basin between us. But it's already too late.
What did you do? I yell.
I kissed you, he answers simply.
You touched me!
He stands straight, unafraid of this fight, it would seem.
Weren't you listening to me? I'm done with it all. I'm not my father. I'm not going to spend my life alone so I can reach 100, 300, a millennium. I don't care about a long life anymore. I can't stand being alone for 1 second longer. I can't stand being apart from you for 1 second longer.
His face falls as something occurs to him. But if you don't feel the same way, I'm sorry I accosted you. Water pools around me on the floor from my dress, but I ignore it.
Same way? I repeat. How? How do you feel?
Callias reaches into a pocket of his dress pants and pulls out a folded parchment. I wrote it on paper. He opens it, looks at the words, and shakes his head.
I can't read it aloud. It's for you to read. Later. Really, I just wanted to prove I could write a better one than Eliotti's. But I'll leave it here and go.
He turns around and places the letter on a nightstand before heading toward his room.
Callias Maharis, don't you dare leave me right now!
He pauses and manages to find my eyes.
Tell me, I say. You don't need to read a letter. Just tell me.
He closes his hands into fists at his sides.
I want you.
I wait for him to say more. When he doesn't, I say, surely you can do better than that. He narrows his eyes at the challenge.
I'm done watching you flirt with other men. I'm sick of it. I don't want you kissing or touching anyone but me.
I keep a straight face as I rub one hand up my other arm. That's awfully selfish of you.
You be quiet now. I'm not done talking. You wanted me to say it. So I'll say it all, selfish or not. When I first saw you, it infuriated me that you never looked at me. Not once during that inane ball. It wasn't until I approached you that you deigned to meet my eyes. And then you insulted me. You mocked me every chance you got. You didn't bow and roll over like every other human alive. You challenged me. That's when I first knew I was doomed.
He takes a step forward.
And then we spent all those meals together, separated by a damned table. And you told me about your dreams,
about your fears. And I wanted nothing more than to grant your dreams and remove your fears.
He takes another step.
You asked to spend more time with me. It was the one thing I thought I could not give, because if I spent more time with you, I would fall for you even harder. This girl who didn't care that I was a king. But then you spent that evening with Leandros, and I realized the one thing worse than not having you was not having you and watching you be with someone else. So I tortured myself by spending more time with you. And you let me talk about my mother. You helped me challenge the council. You put a stop to nearly every problem in my kingdom. You were not only perfect for me, you were perfect for Naxos. So then I knew that marrying you was what I had to do, for the good of the kingdom, even if it meant I would be miserable every day having you near and not having you. But the most exquisite torture of all was the night at the gentlemen's club when I could feel your reactions to me touching you. I didn't know if it was because it was me touching you, or if it was just because you hadn't been touched in a while, as you'd mentioned.